Welcome to the RVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. I am Matthias Kleins.
Our guests today are Professor Claire Waters and Professor Martin Sheldon. We're both interested in fertility in cows. And if I understand the problem right, then there seems to be a big dilemma in the dairy industry between fertility and milk yield on the other hand. So if cows have a high milk yield, they tend to have low fertility, and the other way around. You both are interested in that problem from a scientific point of view. So can you tell me a little bit more about this dilemma and how you're tackling that at the moment in your work?
Since the advent of artificial insemination, there's been an ability to select bulls for much higher yields, and the production from the average cow has gone up a large amount over the last 30 years. So animals in a lot of herds are now producing up to 12,000 litres per lactation, and that puts a huge metabolic stress on the animal, particularly in early lactation when the peak of milk production is occurring. And that does make it very difficult for some of these cows to conceive at the same time as they're having high milk production. So what tends to happen is that either the length of time from calving to when the animal conceives again becomes protracted, which causes both management and economic difficulties, or a large proportion, about 20% of cows at any one lactation, are actually culled for failure to conceive at all.
So if I understand your work right, Claire, then you look predominantly at the metabolic implications and the metabolic system and its effect on fertility. Martin, you on the other hand mainly look at infectious diseases in the uterus and their effect on fertility. Is that somehow linked to the work Claire is doing?
That's right. I think the other issue about what's happened over the last 40 years is that while we've been breeding for high milk yields, we've perhaps inadvertently have selected genes that are less beneficial. So, for example, cows may be more prone to disease, or they may have more lameness. And in fact, we've also changed the breed. So over 40 years, we've switched from predominantly Friesian to predominantly Holstein. So there's been a whole range of changes. And what I'm interested in is uterine disease, because as well as the problems with energy balance, there is a high proportion of animals that have clinical disease and subclinical uterine disease, which affects their fertility. And as you say, the two are linked. So if you are in negative energy balance, it's likely that your immune system is compromised as well.
So if we think about the ways that probably in the future this can be addressed, do you think that management is more important, or do we need to go back and try to use breeding measures again to kind of revert the problem we have created by breeding over the last 20 or 30 years?
There has been an increasing awareness within the breeding industry over the last few years that they really do need to take more account of factors other than yield in terms of bull selection. So they are now increasingly putting aspects such as longevity and fertility into bull selection indices. But this is going to take a very long time to filter through into the whole population within the country. So to improve the cow profile by genetic means would probably take 20 to 30 years. So in the meantime, there's an urgent need to try to optimise the conditions with the animals that we have on the ground. And that does require good management from the metabolic aspect. Nutritional status is particularly important, and that needs to start in the dry period before the animals calve, because if they calve in an inappropriate condition, then they will have difficulties around calving, which will impact both on the kind of things that Martin was talking about, that if they have a difficult calving, they're more likely to suffer subsequently from uterine disease.
I think I agree that we need a dual approach. So there's genomic approaches that are emerging where you can select for marker genes, so you can make perhaps more rapid progress selecting for bulls that are likely to have daughters with greater fertility and able to cope with the metabolic stresses. But we also know a lot about how to manage cows. There's a lot of knowledge out there, but it's actually transferring that knowledge to farmers and getting them to implement it in terms of optimal production, optimal management of animals. So it has to be this dual approach.
So do you think you have to do a lot of educating farmers before they will actually be prepared to implement some of the ideas you have in your research?
I think one of the real difficulties on the farms at the moment are that partly due to the very low price of milk relative to, for example, bottled water, farmers have very little money available to spend on employment of people who have the key skills of looking after the animals well. So that does impact on the animals' welfare, just lack of time on the farm.
So I guess what farmers probably expect really of veterinary science is to provide a slightly more simple approach to things, which is not quite so high in manpower. When we look at your research, what kind of approaches currently do you use to address this dilemma between metabolics, uterine health, fertility and milk yield? What kind of research techniques do you use to answer the main questions?
Well, at the moment, we're covering quite a range of different techniques from a wide-scale epidemiological approach where we're actually going on to a number of different UK dairy farms, collecting data on the fertility of animals, their survival, and the factors that happen during their lifespan which affect actually how long they last. At the moment, the average lifespan of a UK dairy cow is only 3 lactations, and it would be better for the animals and for the farmers if that could be increased. So we're, as I said, using an epidemiological approach to try to look at what's going on there and see if it can be improved. But also, as Martin mentioned earlier, if we're going to go and try and breed animals for improved metabolic factors, then we need to understand more about the genes that are involved. So we've recently started using SNP analysis to try to look at possible variations in some of the genes, which you can then look and see whether those have a beneficial profile for the animals.
So like Claire, I think we also have a global approach to our issue, which is uterine disease and immunity. So the discrete disease is well described in cattle. We've worked on how to diagnose it and how to quantify the severity of disease. We have people looking at the epidemiology, the risk factors for disease and how you might control it. But really our main focus now is that because little has changed over the last 30 years, in fact the disease appears to be more common rather than less common, and the treatments haven't changed, we're trying to look at the mechanisms underlying the disease, what's happening at the molecular and cell level, to try and understand how organisms are recognised in the uterus, how the immune system is switched on, how it's switched off, and what regulates immunity in the uterus. And then we might be able to find new therapeutic approaches where we can control the inflammation and the immune response in the uterus, and also we might be able to develop strategies to prevent disease in the future.
You've mentioned the link between metabolism and fertility and metabolism and uterine health. Over the last 5 or 10 years, there have been a couple of new pathways emerging which seem to be important in the regulation of the metabolic system, for example, leptin or ghrelin. Have you looked at some of those, and do you think they might probably provide an angle to tackle the problems we're facing in the dairy industry?
Certainly people have started measuring leptin in the cow. I think the evidence that that's a particular importance is relatively limited at the moment. One of the things that leptin represents is body condition score, which is a technique that people have been measuring for a number of years, and probably you can get as much useful information by doing good quality body condition scoring as you can by actually measuring leptin concentrations. The issues again seem to relate very much to the condition in which the animal calves. If she's either too fat or too thin before calving, both of those cause problems. If the animals are overweight going into calving, then they tend to have a greater reduction in appetite immediately after calving, and they lose a lot of weight in the first few weeks, and that changes the number of their endocrine signalling pathways that then compromises both the recovery of the uterus and the return to cyclicity. Equally, if they're too thin before calving, then they don't have adequate reserves, and again that puts them in a compromised position.
So general management before calving seems to be quite important, because I think, Martin, you've done some research as well on hypercalcemia after parturition and shown that that is related with uterine health. Could you comment on that?
Yes, that's right. We looked at hypercalcemia on animals that had milk fever, and they were more likely to have uterine disease, and the uterine disease was more severe. We've also looked at a range of other diseases that occur around calving. And they also, as Claire alluded to, impact all the processes that are going on. There's so much change going on as cows transition from being dry to lactating that this is a very complex area. And you were saying about the metabolic pathways, and I think what we've been trying to do is focus on a particular pathway, an immune pathway, and then we will look to see how these different other influences can impact on that pathway.
So if I'm right, then the bovine genome has been sequenced fully now and it's been available for a bit of time. Do you think that is going to affect the way research is going in your field?
I think that's a good question. I mean, certainly we have started to take advantage of the information that is becoming available, and recently microarrays are now available to use in the cow, whereas previously it was mainly just rodent and human work. They do then generate a huge amount of data. They can indicate to you perhaps pathways that are affected that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of. But to get from that to something useful on the farm is going to take a lot more thought and data analysis.
Yes, I agree. It is very useful to be able to have that code available so that you can certainly look within the data or exploit the data through array technology or siRNA or other transgenic techniques to develop strategies for investigating things in the target animal. And also you can use data from model organisms and then go and look to see if those genes are expressed in the cow and whether you can use those or manipulate them in the future.
Just to summarise what you've been saying, I think probably in the near future what we will have to try is improve management of cows rather than waiting for this one big leap in genetics. If you were to be a dairy farmer and you had the opportunity to implement some of the research finding you have made over the last couple of years, what would you try and implement which is not current practice out in dairy farms at the moment?
I think my message at this point is actually very simple, is that we find that on some farms they do manage to have cows that are producing large amounts of milk and remaining fertile. And the factor that appears to be the most important is that they have an extremely competent manager in charge of the unit who is taking account of what's going on with each individual animal. So it's really attention to detail, getting the nutrition right, getting the time of service right, looking after the health of the animal and noticing when things have gone wrong. And there's nothing that can replace having a good stockman at the head of it.
And Martin, I guess that this attention to detail could also improve uterine health massively, couldn't it?
Well, I agree with Claire, just to backtrack slightly, that I think attention to detail and the quality of the management on the farm is the key issue. And would just make a point before we talk about uterine disease that probably one of the key players that the farm manager or the farm owner should take advantage is the veterinary surgeon. And the veterinary surgeon, in terms of knowledge transfer, is actually the link between the researchers, perhaps in academia or in pharmaceutical companies, and the end user. And it is the veterinary surgeon who can take the information from the research providers, synthesise it, and deliver it to farmers in an easily digestible, bite-sized form, and help the manager or farmer design strategies, programmes, goals, targets to achieve what they want to achieve. And that differs from farm to farm. So not every farmer wants maximum milk yield or maximum fertility. So it does vary, and the veterinary surgeon is ideally placed. In terms of uterine disease, the things that have really moved on probably are twofold. One is that diagnosis has become much more specific. So we have designed a scoring system for endometritis so that veterinary surgeons can determine the severity of disease, and that allows them to predict the prognosis, the likelihood of successful treatment. So that's an important issue, that we're adding data, adding value to what we're doing on the farm. And I think the second issue is that farmers need to develop treatment strategies and protocols and standard operating procedures so that animals don't fall through the net and are treated in the best and most modern way possible.
So I guess that's where the vet really comes in, and I hope that just by talking about these issues today, we could alert some of our students and colleagues and tell them about the important role they might play in dairy industry in the future. Well, thank you, Claire, and thank you, Martin, for joining us here today. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.